it will extend to other countries. This must stop.
It's time for the people to have a voice and take action. Today marks the beginning, and we will continue until the war on Gaza and the northern West Bank end.
With refugee camps across Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan, and other supporting countries joining in, the voice of the streets is powerful, and the pain of Gaza has reached unbearable levels.
The empty streets and stores here sends a clear message. One is to Gaza that the pain enduring by Palestinians is the same. The other message is for the world that the time has come for a firmer move to stop Israeli crimes. Naqa Ahmed, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
U.S. President Donald Trump released a video claiming success in targeting what he described as a meeting of higher-ranking military officials. According to Trump, those struck were allegedly coordinating upcoming naval operations, a move he hailed as a strategic victory.
It's well known that part of Yemeni customs and traditions is for people to gather on the first day of Eid to celebrate. The enemy exploited this and targeted the gathering, while the head of the devil, Trump, claimed it was a military meeting. The Yemeni army remains in its military barracks, safeguarding its equipment, and was not affected by this strike, which clearly targeted civilians.
Yemeni military sources quickly refuted those claims, asserting that the airstrike did not hit any military targets. Instead, they say it struck a civilian gathering during Eid celebrations in Al-Hudaydah, one of many such peaceful events happening across the country. The sources stressed that none of the victims had any connection to naval or military activity.
An enemy committed a crime by bombing unarmed, innocent civilians after its failure and inability to confront the Yemeni armed forces, achieving nothing but the targeting of civilians and Yemen's infrastructure. There is pressure on the U.S. administration, and that's what pushed Trump to mislead the American people by claiming he targeted Houthi leaders, when in reality, our military leadership is on the front lines and under the protection of God Almighty.
The same sources went on to describe the strike as part of the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. They argued that the attack, which resulted in dozens of deaths and injuries, highlights what they view as the moral and strategic failure of the U.S. administration.
Despite the destruction and loss, the people of Yemen continue to show remarkable resilience, even as airstrikes claim innocent lives. Communities gather, mourn, and rebuild, refusing to let war define their future. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Their voices filled with frustration and outrage, protesters once again hit the streets of Paris Sunday. They expressed their dismay at the relentless horrors being inflicted by Israel's military on the besieged Gaza Strip. One woman mourned what she called the murder of thousands of children in Gaza by trailing a long sheet of paper with the names of just some of those youngsters killed by the regime's forces. In recent weeks, hundreds more Palestinians have been killed in Israel's renewed bombing and shelling campaign in northern Gaza, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Another indication, say some, Israel is acting with impunity.
I'm just so disappointed about that, and that's why we are in this place every week and since a long time, you know, because I just don't know, you know. Our president is really complicit of this genocide and is really in a, I don't know the word, but very, very close to Israel, and I don't understand that.
In a now notorious incident, Israeli forces killed 15 medics and aid workers, with a new video emerged showing their deliberate execution, as the victims were wearing highly reflective uniforms and were aboard clearly marked Red Crescent ambulances on March 23rd. The video contradicts Israeli army claims that the vehicles were fired upon as they advanced suspiciously towards troops without headlights or emergency signals.
I can't imagine how we could believe anything coming from the Israelis, especially from the IDF. These people have been calling the children Hamas for a year and a half now. So what really surprised me is that some medias are still talking about alleged or probably or maybe or things like that. This is what's shocking. It's not shocking that they have killed some humanitarian workers and assassinated them.
The evidence showing execution-style killings was retrieved from a phone belonging to one of the victims, who was buried by Israeli forces in a mass grave.
Israel has once again warned residents to evacuate large areas of the territory ahead of further military action. Demonstrators here are asking where Gaza civilians, who are bearing the brunt of the conflict, can seek shelter or safety. Peter Hume, Paris.
It is only the second visit after his U.S. trip since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in November 2024 and his first visit to Europe since October 7, 2023. As a party to the Rome Statute, Hungary was required to act on the ICC warrant, but it ignored its obligations. In a press conference, Orban stated that Netanyahu's visit aims to deepen military and intelligence cooperation as well as economic ties between the two sides. He stated that Israel is one of Hungary's largest trading partners.
What makes this matter sad is that today here in Budapest, the killer of 50,000 Palestinian citizens, mostly innocent women, children, and elderly, is here in town. That's the sad part about it.
While Israeli flags were hoisted on government buildings and all bridges across the Danube, anti-Netanyahu protests have been banned by the authorities.
Since the beginning of the genocidal war, 544 days now, there was a clear position from the Hungarian government saying that any pro-Palestine protests will not be permitted or allowed, and that's why people couldn't express their opinion clearly.
Smaller spontaneous protests occurred throughout the day, resulting in fines and arrests. One activist who had been fined several times stated that she was not even informed of the reason for the fines.
No, and the second time they pretended not to speak English until I was done, they spoke English and told me they do speak English. And when I asked them why, they refused to answer the two times.
Orban is not the only European leader who announced his willingness to defy international law. This state visit could set a precedent many around Europe fear.
This is, I think, one of the delicate elements of this this issue, that it's not only Orban. It may be Merz in the near future. Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, has said the same.
Despite Orban's breach of international law, European governments have remained silent. As a result, observers believe that this is just the first of several upcoming trips to EU member states. Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has already signaled his intention to invite Netanyahu and refuses to commit his country to enforce the ICC arrest warrant. Dieter Reinisch, Budapest.
We are here to denounce the ongoing massacres in Gaza and the Israeli incursion in Dara. The people resisted bravely, sacrificing martyrs in the fight against occupation. We stand with them and will never accept Israeli control over our land.
As Israeli airstrikes on Syria escalate, the response from the international community remains absent. In Dara, however, the people have taken matters into their own hands. The popular resistance in southern Syria has proven that armed struggle remains the only way to confront Israeli expansion.
We stand with our brothers in Dara, just as we stand with Gaza. Resistance will never be defeated. Just as Gaza's fighters remain strong, so too will the resistance in Syria. Syrians and Palestinians are united, and together we will defeat Israeli occupation.
Beyond the battlefield, many protesters also blamed Arab regimes for their complicity in Israel's crimes. Calls for accountability rang out against Arab leaders, accusing them of betraying the Palestinian cause and enabling Israeli aggression in the region.
The Israeli occupation will fall. It's only a matter of time, but those who betrayed Gaza and Dara, like Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, and others, must be held accountable. Their complicity is a crime, and no matter what they do, the people will triumph.
With every act of Israeli aggression, the spirit of resistance grows stronger. Today's protests in Damascus and other Syrian cities are yet another testament to the unwavering determination of Syrians and Palestinians to defeat Israel. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
Rabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rabbi English Radio.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. The Trump administration in the U.S. has embarked on a crackdown of over 60 university campuses that it feels have not done enough to put an end to pro-Palestinian activism on their campuses. Now, the first wave of the crackdown targeted foreign students that have expressed opposition to Israel's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, resulting in the illegal revocation of hundreds of student visas, followed by apprehension, detention, and deportation. And now the university campuses are being targeted, with Cornell and Northwestern having nearly $2 billion in federal funding canceled by Trump's administration. Why? For not doing enough to stop students from demanding an end to the wholesale slaughter of women and children in Gaza, and for not acting aggressively enough to end programs for minorities. Now the crackdown has rights advocates outraged and is the focus of today's Spotlight program. But first, let's listen to our correspondent in Utah, Rachel Hamdoun, for more on the story.
University students in the U.S. are being jumped by ICE to disappear and reappear at detention centers merely for being pro-Palestine. One of those examples include Mahmoud Khalil, a Columbia graduate and green card holder who was detained by ICE in New York and who was a participant in the Gaza Solidarity encampments last year. Now, Turkish citizen and Tufts University student Rumeysa Öztürk has also been detained by ICE merely for her participation in an article that called on her university to divest from the Israeli occupation. Columbia University, much like other universities, have done nothing in order to offer help to their students, and instead, like Columbia University, have embraced Israeli policies and has hosted Israeli officials such as ex-PM Naftali Bennett last month. Trump has already threatened Columbia University with a $400 million funding cut, which weakened the university into accepting his terms against pro-Palestinian students. And now the same threat has reached both Brown University in Rhode Island and a $9 billion funding cut threat to Harvard University under the pretext of failing to combat anti-Semitism. Now, this is not only a violation of freedom of speech. This has become a violation of human rights. In a new political era that is attacking students and that is undermining the reputation and integrity of American education, Khalil and Öztürk are two stories of hundreds that remain untold. Yet, the administration hopes to instill fear into American students. Instead, it is giving the students more cause to fight for a free Palestine. Rachel Hamdoun, Utah.
And now for our guests. Joining us is Eve Zangler, author and activist, joining us from Montreal, Canada. And Mr. John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us out of Inderøy, Norway. Hello, gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you both to our Spotlight program here. Pleasure to have both of you on with us. Eves, I can start with you out there in overcast Canada. Eves, your initial thoughts on how first it was the four students with over 300 visas revoked by the Trump administration, Marco Rubio saying it's just basically the beginning of much more, hundreds of more revocations, and now the ante getting bumped up to extend to target universities themselves. And rights advocates, Eves, are going ballistic on how far this thing can be pushed by the Trump administration.
Yeah, well, they clearly have a plan to squash Palestine protest. And they also, I think, have a plan to weaken universities, which and kind of force universities to bow to their political objectives more generally than just on the Palestine question. I would say there's a very authoritarian, arguably fascistic streak within the Trump administration. Now, this could escalate further, and I think that they, you know, they're testing the grounds to escalate further. It's important to note that, you know, the worst repression still was under Biden, and you know, multiple thousands that were arrested during the encampments, and in, you know, many places they squashed the encampments right away, and so it's not just a Trump sort of policy. It is also a Biden backed policy that has lots of the liberal university administrators kind of backing it. And also, it's important to note that I think part of why doing it so focused on the Palestine angle from the Trump administration is that that's an issue that really divides the power structure within the universities, and that there's lots of very wealthy donors to the universities that are extremist pro-Israel people. And they have been pushing for this clampdown for a long, long time. I think that the sort of liberal establishment in the U.S. Defends universities kind of more generally, but on the Palestine issue, they tend to support Zionism. So from Trump's standpoint, honing in on the Palestine issue as a way to go after universities more generally for broader political objectives makes a lot of sense. And I think that's partly what we've seen.
Interesting take there, and thank you, Eves. John, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the Spotlight program. And your opening take on this Trump administration crackdown, John, how easily the White House continues to conflate support for Palestinians with anti-Semitism.
Yeah, you would think that that idea had finally run its course, but apparently not. Eve makes a great point, though, that this is something that was going on under Biden. It was something that was going on under Obama, actually. There has been a steady erosion of civil liberties, of the First Amendment, certainly, and Bill of Rights. We saw a different version of it under COVID, under the lockdown, the protocols, restrictions of movement and so forth, none of which was carried out democratically. It was all government by decree, by fiat. But that's just one stage. This goes back. Censorship has been coming. Obama gave that speech where he said it seems like we need to curate somehow the misinformation on the internet. That was the beginning of a gradual kind of tidal swell of censorship and restriction. And the ultimate goal, of course, is to just silence all dissent and to criminalize all dissent. And the government is preciously close to that already. These student, the foreign students getting their visas revoked and so forth, we'll see if U.S. students are actually prosecuted because there's no legal grounds to prosecute them. These cases can't really stand legal scrutiny, I don't think. So part of this is the kind of Trump administration theatrics. His style is overblown, and he likes the attention, and his administration likes the attention. And they, you know, we saw this with Pete Hegseth yesterday, warning Yemen, you know, more punishment is coming. All the Trump White House has been able to do is bomb civilians in Yemen, much like all Israel can really do is kill civilians. The Houthis aren't worried. They're not scared. There has been a massive deterioration of U.S. Sea power globally. It's the same thing here. I'm not sure how prosecutable any of these policies are towards universities. The universities and you know, these are long-standing universities in the Ivy League and so forth. There are some pretty significant people, and there is some pretty significant money involved. So I don't know. One starts to wonder if the Zionists have any sense of proportion or overplaying their hand in this. I don't know, but they certainly, I know Ben-Gvir is making a trip to the U.S. now next week. So it's like a parade of war criminals coming to Washington, and that seems to be what they're going to stick with, and everything, it's always Israel. It's always somehow Israel is the test case for how far they can push these kind of authoritarian policies. We shall see, I guess.
Now, thank you there, John. The First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution guarantees a freedom of speech, religion, assembly, and press. And it seems that this crackdown by the Trump administration, a lot of people see it as open season on the U.S. constitutional guarantees. And for what? For the Israeli regime. I mean, it's truly astonishing how far the U.S. will go if it is in protection of Tel Aviv that's willing to do this to its own citizens and to its own constitution. Or do you feel like there's something else at play here? Because you alluded to something saying that this whole Palestine issue could just be an excuse for Donald Trump and his administration to try to consolidate more power and go after curbs and constitutional liberties for other objectives and political goals.
Yeah, both things are happening. I think it's absolutely crystal clear that these generally liberal institutions, the main universities, the Ivy Leagues, they are not obviously Trump supporters. They tend to be Democrat supporters. When it comes to Palestine, there is a clear exception. And you see it over and over again where divestment campaigns have been successful on these campuses on issues like prison reform, on issues like divesting from you know, fossil fuel companies. But then the administrations, I think in large part because there is a class of donors that is principally Jewish that are arch-Zionists, someone like Bill Ackman is a clear example, they have very aggressively leveraged their donations to these universities to press them to clamp down. To not, you know, concede to the righteous demands of the divestment campaigns. And in fact, they got the leader of, you know, the presidents of a number of the universities, Harvard, Columbia, previous, you know, fired. That was before Donald Trump. So that's not Donald Trump bringing that in. Now, I think Donald Trump is strategically going with the Palestine issue initially with the universities and framing it as an anti-Semitism and Palestine related. Because it's sort of behind that is also a broader hostility to these universities from a Republican standpoint, from a squashing DEI, you know, equity, sort of inclusion kind of policies, and it's part of a broader kind of right wing attack against these universities. So I think that's also happening. Transpiring, like here in Montreal, okay, the most famous university in Canada, McGill University, just 24, 48 hours ago, they just announced that they're cutting ties with the student union. And the reason they're cutting ties with the student union, the Student Society of McGill University, is because the students at undergraduate students just voted for a strike, a three-day strike, unprecedented in the history of McGill, a three-day strike to call for the university to divest from the genocide in Gaza, from some corporations they're invested in that support, you know, bombs to Israel, and also there's a number of programs that McGill has with Israeli universities. So they're calling for that, and the administration's response is to basically try to just squash the student union. So the students have had three different votes over the past 2 years on divestment on Palestine. Overwhelming results, 80%. The last vote was 80% of undergrads want the divestment. There's been a student encampment. There's been a hunger strike. There's been many, many, many rallies. But the administration responds with absolute, like, just more and more repression. They bring the police on campus. They bring more private security on campus. And now they're actually trying to basically disband the entire student union just because the student union followed its own rules to allow its members to have a vote on any issue. That's the right of students. This so happens to be about Palestine. And the reaction is to try to squash that.
The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
John, withholding over $1 billion from Cornell, this is really not a joke. And another $790 million from Northwestern. Now, this is money the U.S. government, it gives institutions, among other reasons, for a big part of it is research. Cornell says it's doing a bunch of work for the Department of Defense and that profoundly significant, these projects significant to American national defense, cybersecurity, and health. And then Northwestern says it receives drive innovation, innovative and life-saving research. It receives its funds for innovative and life-saving research, like the recent development by Northwestern researchers of the world's smallest pacemaker, John, and research fueling the fight against the Alzheimer's disease, saying this type of research is now a grave jeopardy. So this is the kind of stuff that we're talking about. Trump willing to throw America's welfare under the bus for this apartheid occupation project called Israel?
Well, yeah, I think he is. I don't think he grasps the nuances that you just articulated, and I don't think there's probably anybody in his administration, close advisors, that understands this could trigger a kind of brain drain from American universities. At the same time, the people who have already left these universities are political Democrats, people that are still pro-imperialist and pro, you know, U.S. exceptionalism. They are not exactly radical left-wing communists or anything. So there's a strange, it's very different than the protests during the Vietnam War that were on campus. There was a clear message of anti-imperialism, stop foreign aggression, stop U.S. involvement overseas. This is in a strange kind of way a more theoretical discussion because they're protesting a genocide. There were protests against South African apartheid, but somehow you're not allowed to protest against Israeli apartheid and ethnic cleansing and genocide. Mm. But the liberal establishment, the educated 30% that is white, college educated, East Coast usually, these are people who voted for Biden. These are long-standing Democrats, and they are often at least soft supporters of Zionism and Israel. They have been appalled at this genocide. Younger students, younger people are more aggressively, I think, they're really awoken to the horror of these crimes. But the older university establishment, not so much. So it's a funny situation with this. But back to the original point, I don't think there's anybody in the Trump administration who is a particularly knowledgeable constitutional scholar or anything. We're not seeing that. This is a very ham-fisted and vulgar, like, exercise of authority. And it's a little shocking, but then, you know, this is a guy who wants to annex Greenland and change the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. I mean, we're really in uncharted waters here in terms of, is this really as irrational and insane as it seems? I think the answer is yes, because as I say, we have seen a growing authoritarianism from government, a growing censorship and restrictions, and so in a sense, this is in line with that.
And I'd like to put exactly what John just said over to you, Yves, for if you could elaborate. Why does Israel's opposition to Israel's actions entail a whole different set of rules? I mean, Israel uses U.S. jets to drop U.S. bombs and missiles on the civilian population of Gaza, uses the U.S. veto for cover and to elude accountability in international bodies and organizations. So this is just as much of America's onslaught and genocide as it is Israel's. But so my question to you is here. We've seen in any conflict and war that America has been involved in over the decades, people poured out in the streets. Why has the U.S. been, we've seen a much less crackdown, not that we have never seen it before, because we have. In the 60s, in the 70s, we saw crackdowns. But why does it seem like the U.S. is hell-bent on being, especially institutionally and systematically, cracking down so much harder when it comes to Israel?
Yeah. I mean, it is remarkable. I think there's a whole mix. There's, you know, they support Zionism because it's been a European colonial movement that's aligned with the Empire, British historically, the U.S. today, to divide and control the Middle East. There's a Christian Zionist element. There's obviously this very well-organized, well-financed Jewish Zionist network. The whole anti-Semitism stick, I mean, they really use that, I think, quite effectively, even though obviously this movement in support of genocide has all the power, you know, behind it. It has the ability to frame itself as being you know, marginalized or you know, facing anti-Semitism. I think that there is a really important point, which my colleague was just mentioning, is that this is really dumb from the standpoint of U.S. power and U.S. domination. Let's be really crystal clear about that. This is not smart from the standpoint of having these, you know, important universities that are, you know, world-class, that have lots of resources, that bring people from around the world, and they partly serve as a way to ideologically kind of bring elites from around the world into the U.S. orbit. There's all kinds of ways in which these particular Ivy Leagues, but U.S. universities in general, they serve the U.S. empire and they serve U.S. capitalism. And this type of attack against these universities is not good for the U.S. empire in a medium or long-term perspective. Here in Canada, there's a number of these prominent kind of establishment liberal scholars that have already moved to the University of Toronto from Yale and stuff like that in the last weeks. It's gotten a lot of attention. So this is not a smart. This fits, I think, more with Donald Trump's the kind of fascistic element that is not, I would say, intelligent from the standpoint of medium term and certainly long term. And I also think from the standpoint of support for Israel and Zionism within the U.S., getting so aligned with this Trump administration that is going to almost for sure, by not very long from now, much of the U.S. public is going to be hostile to it because it's operating in such dysfunctional kind of way. Even lots of its policies that might make some sense, you know, tariffs in some occasions make sense, but this just sort of blanket causing conflict with the whole world all at once is very unintelligent functioning. So I think the Zionist movement, the pro-Israel forces that really encouraged this repression, I think, you know, they feel threatened by the students, the encampments and all that, and that's why they're doing it. But it's not actually going to serve the interests of the pro-Israel forces in the medium and long term. And I don't think it also serves the interests of actually, you know, U.S. empire, U.S. capitalism and in the medium long term.
And John, I really appreciate you speaking on that, too. How bad is this for the country and its trajectory, this level of repression? We visit freedom of speech and assembly and the press We know Trump has gone after journalism and press freedoms in the past, irrespective of the Palestine issue. You very well know that. I mean, Israel just kills journalists. Trump restricts their access to the Oval Office and whatnot, and to these press rooms and whatnot. And when it comes to the students, they're not allowing them to assemble, guaranteed a constitutional right there. They're not letting them speak. How bad is this for where the country wants to go, where the country feels it's at, and where it wants to move toward in the future?
Well, I think it's bad, and journalists have already been arrested and detained and harassed by domestic police departments and federal agencies. That's already going on. Eve's point, though, which was kind of underscoring mine, and I'm going to underscore his now again, is yes, this is not smart. You are further destroying American culture. There was still a modicum of U.S. culture that was admirable, that one could be proud of. The 20th century had many artistic movements and movements of literature and thought that were admirable. One of the few things you can feel proud of, actually, as an American. And this is going to strike at the heart of it. The culture has deteriorated already. Reagan pulled the plug on education. That was 50 years ago. Public education is less and less funded and less organized than it was even 30, 20 years ago. This is another blow at the culture in general. It's the dumbing down of American society. I suppose Trump, in his own way, is a statement to that as well. People like Pete Hegg says it's a cartoon world, and this kind of policy, though, is a blow against the last bastion of anything credible in Western culture, U.S. culture, anyway. And it's going to have a very damaging effect. It's going to have an effect that, if they keep it up, these Orwellian policies, it's going to take decades to recover from, if it ever recovers.
I've
got to
go. Gentlemen, thank you, but we do have to wrap it up. I mean, and you're talking about if they keep it up, these are just two universities of 60 that are about to be targeted by the administration. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us in the program. Stay safe to both of you. They're Yves Engler. They're joining us out of Montreal, Canada. And John Stepling joining us from Indore, Norway. Thanks for tuning in. This brings us to end your Spotlight program. Stay safe and bye-bye for now.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
the limelight.
By having facilitated the wave of airstrikes by arming and funding the Israeli regime, as has been the practice of his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has proven yet again that far from being a peacemaker, he is a warmonger. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Netanyahu's right-wing terror thugs Ben-Gavir and Smotrich have not only welcomed the renewal of scorched-earth policies, the fury and intensity of missile strikes and deadly bombings across the besieged Gaza Strip is not only the settler colonial regime's continuation of the genocide, but also a decisive rejection of the ceasefire it had signed. The regime's criminal leaders, particularly Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on the International Criminal Court's wanted list, have sought every pretext under the sun to resume massacres of innocent civilians. Despite the so-called lull in the interim period when the first phase of the ceasefire kicked in, the Israeli regime has been itching to shed more Palestinian blood to add to the thousands upon thousands of martyrs since October 7, 2023. Overnight, while displaced Palestinians who have been subject to the Zionist regime's inhumane blockade of food, fuel, medication, and other essentials, and smack in the middle of Ramadan, preparing suhoor meals in makeshift plastic tents and bomb buildings, Netanyahu unleashed terror upon them. Within minutes, more than 400 civilians were martyred, mainly women and children, 1,000 or more injured, with no means to be medically treated. Reports indicate that the current military strikes are deadlier and wider in scale than the regular series of drone attacks Gaza has been experiencing during the weeks Netanyahu defaulted by violating the original ceasefire terms. In response to the current attacks, the Palestinian resistance Hamas has slammed the Zionist regime for disregarding its obligations by overturning the ceasefire agreement. The Israeli regime, which has repeatedly violated the ceasefire that went into effect on January 19th, sought to fabricate new terms in an effort to justify blowing up the deal entirely. Analysts point out that since January, Netanyahu has waged a campaign of sabotage and provocation, openly violating the terms of the agreement by hindering and outright blocking the delivery of aid into the Gaza Strip. While food and other supplies were permitted to enter Gaza throughout the first 42 days of the deal, Israel refused to allow almost any of the 60,000 mobile homes and only a fraction of the 200,000 tents to enter Gaza. Though Netanyahu has sought to blame Hamas on fake charges of undermining the ceasefire, the reality is that he imposed a total blockade on any aid, including food and medical supplies, to the Strip, and resumed its policy of using starvation as a weapon of war. Recently, the Zionist regime also cut off the electricity supply to Gaza, forcing a major desalination plant to slash its water output severely, limiting the amount of drinking water available to 600,000 people in Deir el-Balah and Khan Yunis. Hamas is known to have adhered to the agreement and was keen to maintain it. But Netanyahu, looking for a way out of his internal crises, preferred to reignite the war at the expense of the blood of the Palestinian people, Hamas said in a statement. According to a Haaretz report, Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani demanded immediate international action to compel Israel to implement an immediate ceasefire abide by the Gaza ceasefire agreement and return to negotiations. That the demands by a key member of the mediation team are exclusively directed at Israel confirms the fact that, contrary to Netanyahu's claim, it is not Hamas that has violated the agreement. This view is reinforced by media reports that the Hostages and Missing Families Forum has denounced Israel, not Hamas. A spokesperson is quoted in Haaretz: "The greatest fear of the families, the hostages, and the citizens of Israel has come true. The Israeli government has chosen to give up on the hostages." Indeed, Netanyahu's right-wing terror thugs, Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, have not only welcomed the renewal of scorched-earth policies, but gleefully exclaimed that the plans were prepared weeks ago. Their excitement at the slaughter of innocent mothers and babies reveals more and more approval. It confirms that Israel had no intention to honor the agreement and had plotted to blame Hamas to justify the current savagery. Since the inception of the ceasefire in Gaza 60 days ago, the Palestinian resistance and responsible organizations have meticulously tracked repeated violations of the agreement by the Zionist regime, says the Palestinian prisoner network Samedun. At the same time, in order to protect their people, the resistance has not once violated the ceasefire agreements nor retaliated against the Zionist war criminals. Ezzat Aresh, a founding member of Hamas political bureau, stated, "The enemy will not achieve through war and destruction what it has failed to achieve through negotiations." Trump's greenlighting of the Zionist regime's bloodbath makes him directly culpable in a series of war crimes, including genocide and ethnic cleansing. By having facilitated the wave of airstrikes, by arming and funding Israel, as has been the practice of his predecessor Joe Biden, Trump has proven yet again that far from being a peacemaker, he is a warmonger. Alon Mizrahi sums up the devastating news of a renewed genocide, immediately followed by harrowing images, as a tsunami wave of shock, disbelief, and pain.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: the death toll from the Gaza genocide is approaching 50,900 as Israel's air and artillery strikes claim more civilian lives across the territory. The UN warns that over 2 million Palestinians are facing an acute hunger crisis amid Israel's total ban on aid entry into Gaza. And also coming up, Hamas files a legal appeal in the United Kingdom to challenge the British government's decision to designate the group as a terrorist organization. Hello and welcome to your world news. The Israeli regime presses ahead with its genocide on Gaza, killing and injuring more Palestinian civilians across the besieged territory. Two more Palestinians were killed and several others injured in a bombing of an area east of the central city of Deir al-Bala. Two more civilians, including a child, lost their lives following an airstrike on a Palestinian home east of the southern city of Khan Yunis. One Palestinian was killed and several others were wounded, some seriously, after a tent housing displaced persons was bombed west of Khan Yunis. Israel's artillery fire also wounded a number of Palestinians in the Shujaiya neighborhood of Gaza City. Earlier,